Radio.
You know Jay's low when he reaches out and starts going back into the dating apps. It's kind of like Jay's rock bottom. And I don't mean rock bottom in a bad way. It's almost like a home base for you, where it's almost like a reset, a restart for you.
Yeah, of sorts. Yeah. But even though, you know,
much like the Suicide Squad, which we'll be reviewing this week.
Right.
It's your reboot. You know, when you've exhausted all the other options and everything else has dried up, all your wells have dried up, and you've been through the desert on a horse with no name.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Oh my God, we've got a freaking kaiju up in this shit!
You know the deal. Successfully complete the mission, you get 10 years off your sentence.
Times are hard.
You fail to follow my orders in any way, and I detonate the explosive device in the base of your skull.
Can do the job for free.
So this is the famous Suicide Squad.
Num.
Any questions?
We're all gonna die.
I hope so.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Here's the deal. We fail the mission, you die.
If we find out any information you give us is false, you die.
If we find out you have personalized license plates, you die.
What? No.
If you cough without covering your mouth...
Harley, although that isn't an open invitation for you to cough without covering your mouth.
What's the plan?
How the hell am I supposed to know?
You're the leader. You're supposed to be decisive.
And I've decided that you should eat a big bag of dicks.
If this whole beach was completely covered in dicks, and somebody said I had to eat every dick until the beach was clean for liberty, I would say no problemo.
Why would someone put penises all over the beach?
Who knows why madmen do what they do?
This is suicide.
Well, that's kind of our thing.
That's right. It's time for the Suicide Squad. And now that this movie's out, I can stop making that joke. I remember like months ago.
No,
I was
that'll
like,
always happen.
The Suicide Squad, like the same way all the NFL players said, like the Ohio State. But now we've finally gotten James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. And for a long time, we wondered what this movie was going to be. What was it? Is it a sequel? Is it not? You know, I think DC for once got out there and did some great marketing for this, first off, and did a great job with interviews and allowing certain information to come out to explain to everybody exactly what The Suicide Squad was. It is not a sequel to the original one. However, it's not ignoring the original one. This is a replacement. This is a complete overhaul, redo. And part of me, you know, wonders like that, you know, did DC truly know what they had on their hands when this movie, you know, is released? Did they know what they had before it's released? Did they know that it was going to be this much of a cultural or pop cultural, you know, fest? Like people are loving this movie. Like they are gargling the balls of this movie. And
well, the ones that see it.
Well, the ones that see it, and that's the problem, man. I think in a more healthier environment, this movie would come out, and this would probably beat out Deadpool and Deadpool 2. It would be out probably several of the MCU movies in box office. It wouldn't reach, you know, true heights of you know, that $1 billion because of the rated R, but it would certainly be a movie that
it'd be successful. I mean, look, the first one was successful. It still made money. You know?
If it was a healthier if it was a healthier, you know, theater going environment, mm-hmm. it would be talked about so much that my mom would probably ask me whether she should go see it or not. That's how it is, and that's always my barometer.
You're not wrong. And guess
would
what?
Would my mom watch this?
And you know, I feel even more worse for these guys in a lot of ways is that Free Guy comes out next weekend,
which is also getting great pre-buzz, just like this
getting
did.
The exact same buzz. It's like back-to-back, fantastic, surprising, great comedies that are, you know, kind of catering towards a similar demographic.
Yep.
But,
and both with Taika Waititi in minor supporting roles.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he knows how to scout the good material.
No, I don't think. I think he's made friends.
He's found
a lot of like-minded people since, no pun intended, since he's come out of the shadows.
Correct. But as I was getting to the fact that, like, if Free Guy, which I think will more so flop, if that also does, you know, disappointing box office numbers off the heels of Suicide Squad, you're going to see a lot more pushbacks for big blockbusters over the remaining of the year, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I think you're right. I think, like, if these two movies that are getting,
because if these guys
positive
do well,
critical response,
yeah,
out the,
yeah,
gate, and still aren't, I mean, don't get me wrong, The Suicide Squad is number one.
Yeah.
It beat out Jungle Cruise. Jungle Cruise is behind it. I believe it is, like,
but
I
even Jungle Cruise didn't do well. So that's the thing. Like, it didn't. Not really.
No,
not
no, really. No. What I'm saying is, well, doesn't really matter whether Jungle Cruise did well or
but
not.
Not
a lot of people
point.
Really
point
liked
is
that
the
movie.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, as far as who is going out to the theaters.
But yeah, I mean,
it's
on an opening weekend for a comic book film, it did $26.5 million, The Suicide Squad, where Jungle Cruise brought in $15.7 million on its second weekend. Old is still out there with $4.1 million. Black Widow is still out there, made $4 million this weekend. And then rounding out the top five was Stillwater with $2.9 million. Stillwater could have came out earlier this year, later this year. I think that still would have done, you know, only mildly better, because that's one of those award seekers and stuff
kind
like
of
that.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Yeah. But you know, if this was an opening weekend for The Suicide Squad in a healthier market, I think it easily would have brought in, you know, the $80 to $75 million, probably.
Probably
more theaters open and stuff,
yeah,
like that, but that's not the environment we're in. So, and I think studios are coming along now, and they're kind of measuring success in different ways, since they can't rely on box office. You know, like Disney's, you know, relying on their premiere, on their premiere access on Disney Plus, and other ones are relying on critical reviews. Was this critically well received? Yeah, it was. So maybe we might think about doing a sequel. They're kind of understanding that this entire year is going to be a wash. And I think 100% after this, especially with the news story we did last week, where we talked about a DC exec saying that there's more projects in the pipeline for James Gunn with the DC universe. I think that ultimately, you know, kind of tells us that, like, they're getting a buzz out there that they are going to make a sequel, and that sequel will come out sometime after Guardians 3, which is coming out in 2023, I believe, or 2022, which means, you know, in 2023, 2024, look for a The Suicide Squad sequel. You can't put a number on it, because this one is already, according to our friends over at Shaken Not Nerd, they were calling it Suicide Squad, which is apt. So they would have to give it some colon and then a subtitle after that, you know, The Suicide Squad, murder for hire.
Sure. Yeah, I don't expect that to be coming anytime soon.
As long as it's not the Emancipation of the Fabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. As long as it's not some ridiculously long title like that. But so we kind of talked about this pre stuff, pre release and stuff like that. I think DC did the best job that they could to get the marketing out on the movie. You know, I watched it on HBO Max because I have that option, and I believe you went to the theaters to see it, correct?
Yep, theaters, and the next day I watched it on HBO again.
Okay, cool. I watched it twice, both on HBO Max. And as always, Jay, I kind of wrote up a synopsis, but this synopsis is a little different because it's going to kind of spoil my entire review, and that's fine. I'm really, you know, I understand that as far as, like, negatives go, as far as, like, really reviewing this movie goes, that's going to be you this time. I don't have a whole lot negative to say. So, The Suicide Squad follows the titular team on a mission to DC Comics stand-in for Cuba, Corto Maltese, with some familiar faces and lots of new ones too. All that equals a Suicide Squad movie in which members of the squad will actually die. Which might seem unusual if you were solely going on the experience of the first film, where literally no one of importance died, making their actions mostly meaningless. But put that original film aside, as this somewhat sequel is nothing like its original. Sequels are meant to be bigger, bolder, and more bombastic than the original, but they rarely reach their mark. However, this isn't a sequel per se. It still has all those qualities a studio wants from a sequel and a much larger cast to boot. But unlike this film's 2016 counterpart, the characters and their actions make sense within the story we are being told. They are developed in a meaningful way that would often rather show you than tell you, or just put words on the screen for you to read like the original chose to do for all of its character introductions. It's a comic book movie on its surface, but it's also a wonderfully nuanced black comedy with crazy amounts of action and violence that punches its story and gags to heights that no DC movie has previously reached. Critically. It's not going to make the money, but critically. Critically, it's gotten there. So that kind of sums up. I made a lot of comparisons to the 2016 because I don't think that you can review this movie and ignore that the 2016 movie happened, much like DC may want you to do.
Even though this is a reboot.
This is a soft reboot. However, I did notice like throughout the story, and we're not going to get into it here, but I'll talk about it in spoilers, but there are some things that they don't exactly reference any single thing that happened in the other movie, but characters that were in the original movie are kind of changed as a result of that original movie. And I'll get into that a little bit in spoilers, but specifically I am talking about Harley Quinn and Rick Flag. I believe their characters in this movie 100% dealt with what they dealt with in 2016. It's canon. It's just not getting mentioned.
I hear you. Yeah, I feel you on that.
So it's very clear that everything that we know about Harley Quinn from Suicide Squad and from Birds of Prey probably still holds for that character. I think DC would like a continuity to continue for that character, and I think that
Viola Davis's character. I think Amanda Waller, you know, just gets even more cunning, you know?
She's far more ruthless and far more cunning than she was in the original. And if you remember in the original, they all kind of just like flipped the bird to her and kind of went off and did their own thing. I don't think Amanda Waller, whose, you know, nickname in the comics is Amanda the Wall Waller. You know, you don't get the name like the Wall and be a tough, badass bitch like she is. And I don't say bitch derogatory here. She's straight up like OG bitch. Like, she is fucking amazing. I love Amanda Waller as a character. I think she's a wonderfully nuanced foil for everyone she deals with, whether it's Batman, whether it's the Suicide Squad. You know, I love moments when she goes up against men. Like, that's always my favorite in the stories, is when she puts little men in their place, like these little men that feel like they have big power and they have this, that they have the upper hand. And she is just as smart and tactitionally minded as someone like Batman is, which is why she's such a wonderful foil to exist in the DC universe. And I love Viola Davis's portrayal of it. Like, she, as little time as she got in this movie, she fucking killed it every moment that she got in it, just like she did with the original one. I can't point to a scene in the original movie where I can say Viola Davis did anything wrong, even if she was given shit to say. Mm-hmm. She turned that shit into that fucking chicken shit into fucking chicken salad. That's how good Viola Davis is.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. I gotta say, so I was unfortunately, you know, running a bit late to get to the theater to see this movie, and I probably I'll just say a minor spoiler, but I kind of cut to, but people who saw it, I cut to, when I got into the theater, a water death with a long hair.
Okay, so you missed literally this entire movie's opening sequence.
Exactly.
Which set the tone for this movie.
Exactly.
If the first one was PG-13 and that was your problem, guess what? This one, that scene on the Corto Maltese beach completely puts that to bed. This is a rated R movie.
Oh, right? Yeah. No, without a doubt. But
it set the tone with its dark humor. It set the tone with so many other aspects of the movie moving forward that entire scene existed for that. Now, you did go back and see that scene, so you kind of get what I'm saying.
Correct. And I do believe that. Well, I'll get to that. But I'll just say, you know, it's not like I was in a bad state of mind or anything like that. And I don't know if it's just the jarring introduction into this movie. You know, once again, I'm not the biggest comic book nerd. Most of these people, I don't even know.
There's not a lot of comic booky stuff. This doesn't throw a whole lot of heavy comic book Easter eggs your way to make you go, like, wait, what?
But, I mean, all these random characters, you know, like DC, whatever the hell they are, I don't know. But all these different kind of players that you see in the beginning of the movie, I don't know who they are. I just
I
know
love how you say
promotion.
Players as if you walked into, like, the theater and were handed a playbill and took your seat in the balcony and got out your little binoculars and put them up and were like, we're going to see a show. So you were expecting Oliver Twist or something? Like, were you expecting like a Rodgers and Hammerstein? Like, what were you expecting?
Well, if they're not comic book characters, who are they?
But what were you expecting from James Gunn is what I'm saying. Like this,
well,
I'm not the biggest James Gunn guy,
so that's the thing.
The humor's not all that different from other James Gunn outings like Slither or like Brightburn. There is a hyper violence to it and stuff like that. And of course the humor it's there, but obviously
but always
it's ramped
humor
up.
Is subjective.
I understand. And this is not your type of humor.
Well, let me say this: it is one of those things where, like I said, in the second viewing. Again, I'll get to it. So the first movie, essentially, I'll cut down to the boiling points of the fact that the comedy didn't hit and the editing fell harsh and I just didn't care about any of the characters besides like Ratcatcher and like a little bit of Polka Dot Man and even,
oh, you mean the main
and
characters?
Even King, and even King Shark.
But Jay,
didn't
that
really
opening
work for
scene
me.
Existed so that you could care about these characters because if
well
without spoiler, yeah, but that opening scene existed because you sure. needed to care about sure. these characters, and if we had all those other characters around, you wouldn't have had time to get to know these characters.
It felt very cut, like if it was just very abrupt. It felt very forced. And I just ultimately had moments. There's a lot of moments. I still had like a lot of moments that I thought shined. Yeah. But it was one of those things as a whole, I could not get into the movie. And I originally graded it, and I still stand behind it. My first viewing was a C- grade for this movie.
I think that's terribly low. I think you're being pretty harsh on the movie.
Now,
it's a comic book movie, and I think a lot of them have this type of quick cuts and stuff like that. You know, well, there's... this isn't Green Knight, you know. You're not getting the sweeping,
but it felt like
know,
it felt like
fucking.
But it also felt like
shots.
Fast and the Furious type action sequences sometimes.
Oh,
too.
This is. I think this set its action up far better than Fast and Furious. I think Fast and Furious is.
That's what
is,
I felt
is,
like too.
Fast and Furious barely comes together on its editing room floor. I feel like they just shoot stunt after stunt after stunt after stunt, and they just cut shit together to see what works. I think this was far better planned out and far better done.
I will say, though, my second viewing was much different. That's what I'm leading to.
Okay.
I'm just cut to it. It was a polar opposite of viewing experience. I don't know why, but maybe because I just was prepared to give it another shot. I initially just wanted to watch the opening that I missed. And immediately, I just fell into the movie so much better. And I just got into the characters. I got into the flow. All the comedy started to hit. The editing. You know, obviously, there's still some things about it that it was a little distracting. I thought that was a little too much. That's just not quite my taste. But my grade, okay. And on top of that, the movie sticks with you, and there's so many good scenes with these kind of quirky characters that
there's
my
great
grade
one-liners,
in my mind keeps wanting
too.
To go up. Like I initially said it was a B, now I'm saying B plus. And for Christ's sake, it can go up if I watch the movie right now. Who knows?
Jack, question: Starfish, slang for a butthole. Do you think there's anything there?
And that whole scene is like. Perfectly silent. You know, like there's no background
music. Can we talk
music,
about
nothing.
John Cena? Because
sure.
While watching this movie, my wife does not like John Cena as far as acting goes. There's not been a movie with John Cena where she's been like, that was pretty good. You know what I mean?
He does go for broke for comedy, and I appreciate that.
With this, I felt like, first off, seeing the guy that will tomorrow be at a children's hospital fucking signing autographs as his WWE counterpart John Cena and making 10 to 12 make-a-wishes come fucking true, seeing that family-friendly guy, that guy that has been sold to us is so family-friendly, also fucking like whisper to Bloodsport because it's fucking dope. It's like, oh my god, watching him take an axe and repeatedly bludgeon a man with the sharp end of the axe just up and down
that
his body.
That was awesome. love that.
So he leaves it stuck into his chest.
I love that.
I'm just like, this is the guy that just made a movie called Playing with Fire in which he adopts two children that were lost in a fucking, or three children that were lost in a fucking firestorm that he was sent out to fight. That family-friendly comedy that I didn't hate. I didn't love it. Don't get me wrong. But I didn't hate. That's the guy that's doing this.
Not to mention the Tidy Whitey bulge.
Not to mention the Tidy Whitey. Like, but I mean, here's this guy that's like, he's never been sold to us like this before. And I'm not sure if James Gunn did it or not. I got to give it to Gunn for this, to make this believable. Because originally, a little bit of pre-Easter egg talk.
I give it to Cena. I give it to Gunn for casting him, but I definitely believe that Cena did a phenomenal job with this role.
Peacemaker was originally supposed to be Dave Bautista. Back when James Gunn reached out to Bautista and asked him if he wanted a role in this when he was, you know, unfortunately fired, which we already talked about when we talked about Suicide Squad, the original 2016. When he was fired, he reached out to Dave Bautista and said, you want to come over here and you want to do this? He already worked with Warner Brothers, Dave Bautista in Blade Runner 2049. He's with Dune. He has a contract with Warner Brothers. It would have been an easy get. But, of course, Dave Bautista decided not to, and also continuing with his Warner Brothers contract, jumped on the Zack Snyder Army of the Dead, which at the time was being developed by Warner Brothers. So he wanted to take a starring role rather than this side role. And I got to thank Dave Bautista for not taking it.
I don't think any of this would have worked.
It wouldn't have worked with Dave Bautista.
It would be too deadpan.
So well with John Cena. And I got to give it to Idris Elba. Idris Elba is, much like Viola Davis, he's that more nuanced actor. So the things that you're picking up for him are very minor. Like, one of the things that like really stood out to me, there's a scene in a bar where he has his English accent the entire time, but he jumps up at one point and he puts on the world's worst American accent that an Englishman could muster. And he says, like, he's like, "We're your American friends," you know, like kind of like in this really, and we know that this dude can do an American accent because he was on the fucking Wire doing an American, a Baltimore accent flawlessly. And then he's also been in The Office doing an American accent. In The Office, he played a British guy. But he's been in things before where he's played a non-British guy and done it well. He did almost like the Southern drawl type thing when he was in Dark Tower. He didn't have the English accent there. Mm-hmm. So like, it's this little nuanced thing where he jumps off and he purposely puts on a fake American accent that sounds awful and sounds like someone's faking an American accent just for that one moment. And I got to think that that's Idris Elba. That's not James Gunn. You know what I mean? I think James Gunn wrote a great script. This film did a fantastic job of telling you what you needed to know in the most minute, minor details possible, but it still allows you to fill that backstory or fill the holes in that character story based on that very small, minute line. It doesn't over-explain itself, and this movie would definitely rather show you than tell you, which is something that I always complain about with a lot of movies, where it's like, don't tell me this, show me this. You know, don't go into this exposition dump and just dump all the information I want on me. Show me through the character, show me through their actions, show me through in these little moments, mm-hmm, more. I think there's only one little moment that I think felt forced, and it's between Bloodsport, Idris Elba, and Ratcatcher 2, where he kind of like tells her, like, you know, "I'll get you out of here alive, I promise." And it's just like, it's this moment of like connection and almost like a kinship between them, because, you know, as Bloodsport goes, he has a strained relationship with his daughter. Ratcatcher 2, obviously, you know, by the name,
she's
Ratcatcher
got daddy
2
issues,
there,
yeah,
there was a Ratcatcher 1, and it's her father and stuff. So I understand based on the way stories are told that these two should, you know, try to fill those holes, those emotional holes with one another. But it's such a throwaway, like, not throwaway moment. I just don't think that relationship between those two developed prior to that moment enough for that moment to happen. And I think like as far as like this script goes, and as far as like this movie goes, the story goes, that's like one of the few flaws I can point to and say like maybe we could have developed that relationship just a little bit more, just to make it more impactful at the end when they're, you know, doing what they do for each other and stuff like that. Also, my other negative is the third act. You know, we're having this big showdown between the Suicide Squad.
It's not
and
even
a
so
member-
much the third act; it's the final act.
It's the final act, right? But between the Suicide Squad and a member of their team, who I will remain unnamed because we're not in spoilers, who has turned on them, and then that scene ends, and then another aspect
unresolved
of the
story,
an unresolved point of the
resolved.
Story comes comes back up, and then now we're going to face that threat after immediately dealing with this threat that we've kind of dealt with for the past 15 minutes. Now we have to spend another 15 minutes taking care of this final threat, the final boss, like a video game. And to me, not that I didn't love everything that happened before that moment and loved everything that happened after it, I felt like just the way the story beat went, it built me to a crescendo, brought me to the top, then dropped me back down, let me rest for only a few seconds, and then tried to ramp me right back up. It felt like we were at a natural point for it all to end at that point. And to me, I was like, even though I'm loving my experience, I felt like they should have found a way to marry those two subplots, those two aspects of the story,
yeah,
and put them together in a way so that it continues ramping up and then gives me the fall, gives me the drop, and brings me back down emotionally and stuff like that.
I agree.
To bring me bring me back up again. I'm just like, ooh, well, all right. I mean, I've been taking a ride with you so far, so I'm going to continue going with it. I'm still loving what you're doing. I'm still loving it. Those are like my two negative things that I can really point to in this and say like those are the two things I didn't love. I don't think they really hurt my experience too much. I still had a fantastic time with it. I just think that those two things I have to do negatives, right? We're doing a review. You have to do negatives. So that's it. That's all I got for negatives. Everything else in this movie, you know, I was fucking on board with it. Who's Milton?
That was a surprising gag.
It was such a fun
work.
Such
pretty damn well.
It's such a James Gunn like type thing too, like because like
even at the end when Harley even says it like really far removed
when she calls Bloodsport, she calls Bloodsport Milton. That's not my name. Like, and it's one of those things because like even though
it's like we were just talking about, and it just goes to show it's another callback of how mentally fucked up she is.
No, not even that. It's a callback to the fact that these two practically haven't even interacted with each other throughout the entire movie.
Well,
she only gets introduced to Bloodsport when they're doing that half-assed rescue of her, and he's hanging from the ceiling, and you know, Rick Flag kind of tells her like, "Oh, this is Bloodsport," and he goes, "Hi, nice to meet you." And like, that's really the only interaction the two characters have. So towards the end, when she calls him Milton, it's like that's a nice touch. Because if she hugged him or we had this big emotional like revelation between the two, I would have been like, no, wait, that doesn't work. These two characters have barely interacted throughout this entire movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So
you're right.
It's a credit to the writing again. Like there's so many things that I'll point to when we do spoilers coming up that is just a credit to the writing. But Jay, you already gave your score. You're all the way up to a B+ now.
Yep.
I'm at an A-, which I think is a fantastic score for this. I think, it far exceeded my expectations.
And I do.
For sure.
I do
DC.
Also want to say.
I expected them to fuck it up somewhere. I expected them to fuck it up somewhere. But they did something so different this time that they haven't done previous in the past. They got James Gunn. They knew they had a dude who has made so many hits over on the other side of the superhero coin that they were just like, nah, man, just... We love the shit you do. Just do you.
Yeah.
Just
but
do
also,
you.
You know, one of those things worked. Where I do believe that this is going to probably improve on rewatchability. And there's enough really memorable characters and you know, that's going to really help a lot of these small actors' careers, I think, take off
for
as
sure.
Well. I mean, Ratcatcher,
sure.
Brand new, fresh-faced girl. I mean, she stole the movie practically in
the
emotional way, and
she was
fantastic. Had a lot of great moments, and And also, Polka Dot Man was a surprise. One of the surprising characters that was able to somehow work in not just a movie, but a live-action movie, and have some kind of fleshed-out emotion to it.
And David Desmachin, he's previously a guy that's like, he's always a background guy, or you know, he's there for like a quick quip or something like that in movies. He never really has like a starring role or anything like that. He's great in this. He's absolutely great. And one of my favorite things is, like, you know, I was watching like a lot of like the hype videos and stuff like that, which are doing interviews. Apparently, like, on set, he is the resident like comic book nerd, and he especially focuses on DC. So a lot of times he actually found himself correcting James Gunn on a lot of aspects of not just his character, other people's character. He's a true fan on top of that, which I absolutely loved. But I mean, the characters that they chose to focus on in this were fantastic. And I don't want to take anything away from Joel Kinnan or anything like that and say that Joel Kinnan was bad in this movie. He wasn't. Joel Kinnan was great. He was very good at very, very, very muted jokes. Yeah. But if you want to see Joel Kinnan acting the shit out of something or just being fucking fantastic, then go watch For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus, because For All Mankind is just fucking phenomenal, and he is fucking phenomenal in it. He's great here. He's good here, but he's phenomenal in For All Mankind. But yeah, so Jay, I'm at an A-, you're at a B+. Sounds like we're pretty simpatico, at least as far as our grades go. Jay, let's head over. Let's get into some spoilers.
Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning.
All right, so spoilers. Just right off the bat. The scene that Jay missed in the movie, which I think that you didn't like the movie the first time around as much as you did the second time, because you missed this opening. And this
I kind of feel like that's very true.
This opening literally set the tone for the entire movie, as I said in our main review, because we're introduced to so many characters, and they all walk on this beach, and they all fucking die, including a Suicide Squad alum, Captain Boomerang, to the point where Harley Quinn like shouts out Boomer, and it's like, do you really care? You know she doesn't care. And all of them fucking die, and of course Pete Davidson, who plays Blackguard here, he turns on them all and kind of like tells them like they're all over here, we're all on the beach, and then he gets his face blown off, and the whole shit show just starts from there. And the tone that it's trying to set is, A, the first one was PG-13. This one's R. Secondly, the first one barely killed any Suicide Squad members. This time, we're killing all of them.
Well, but also, I thought what I really give Gunn a lot of credit for is killing off the right kind of characters to make sure that we're staying on our toes. And just
one of the things that got me was like killing Boomerang was essentially
perfect example. Perfect example.
That is essentially killing the first movie.
Right.
That's what you did. That's what he did. He set a tone by killing the first movie.
Kind of a fan favorite. People expected to see him in this movie more. And
I don't know about a fan favorite. A lot of people complain about Jai Courtney, and I think killing him off and just taking him out of the equation was probably the smart thing to do.
But even just like Nathan Fillion, for example, you know, the stupidest character probably. Well, maybe not the stupidest, but one of the dumbest ones.
That's James Gunn giving his buddy a job, right? Like, I mean, not just giving his buddy a
silly job. It was silly.
But they're friends, you know. Nathan Fillion was in his movie Slither. Nathan Fillion's a good friend of his. And there's even a callback to Slither because Nathan Fillion, who plays TDK, which one of the jokes I love, and it's like, your name is just letters? And it's Captain Boomerang. All names are letters, you fucking dick. Terrible Australian accent, I apologize, dude. But the fact that he is drinking, TDK's drinking Mr. Pibb, is literally an exact callback to a scene that is in that is in Slither. And, you know, fuck it, I'll just play the scene because I fucking love it.
Where is the Mr. Pibb? I told your secretary to pack Mr. Pibb. It's the only Coke I like. Goddamn Brenda's exploding like a water balloon. The worms driving my friends around like the goddamn skin guards. People are spitting acid at me, turning into cottage cheese. And now there's no fucking god damn Mr. Pimp!
Jesus Christ, Jack, let me get right on it.
So, I mean, like, there's little things in there, but, like, the Easter eggs that we get aren't, like, so deep DC Easter eggs that, like, you need to be the biggest comic book nerd to pick them up. A lot of it is just, like, these very little things. Like, first off, Corto Maltese. I think we talked about it when we did the trailer breakdown. That's an 89 Batman. It's mentioned there. It first made its appearance in Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns and stuff like that. So it's been around the DC universe for a long time. So that's not really like an Easter egg. But, you know, just going through it, some of the other things that like I noticed was Lloyd Kaufman is in the strip club. And Lloyd Kaufman is pretty much James Gunn's. First off, he's the guy that started Troma Studios. First off, So Toxic Avenger, you have Lloyd Kaufman to thank for that. But James Gunn's first movie was Romeo and Juliet under Lloyd Kaufman at Troma Studios. So this is a guy who literally fostered the career of this huge big name director now. So Lloyd Kaufman gets a little cameo in there, which I thought was fantastic, which I thought was great. But there's a lot of callbacks to like the original Suicide Squad, and not like overt ones either. So like they kind of mentioned that they thought that Harley was free, which kind of takes us back to Birds of Prey as she's getting on the plane, and she mentions she, without going into a backstory like the original one did or showing us a flashback, she literally mentions that I got arrested for reckless driving in a bank. So first off, it immediately goes, that sounds like a Harley Quinn thing. Also, I would like to see that, but also how, and also it doesn't matter. That is just enough information that I need. That's the right amount of information. It's a line that's thrown away, but it gave me just the right amount of information on it. And then like later on, if you're wondering like, you know, where's she been like after Birds of Prey? She mentions that the Joker stabbed her dogs, which is previously something that hasn't happened, which means after Birds of Prey, like most abused people do, she returned to her abuser. She returned to the Joker, who promptly stabbed her dogs, which I assume one of them may have been a hyena. I don't know. and that's why she kills the El Presidente, because she told herself after that incident that she
any
would...
Any more red flags, she's going to kill the guy.
She's going to fucking kill him. And that... Right there is literally using previous incarnations of Harley Quinn played by Margot Robbie to build upon this character that they didn't need to spend too much time building this character up at all. We know Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn and we kind of get what it's all about. And she played it to perfection here. Even the fight scene in the Capitol that she has, where she's fighting all the Corto Maltese soldiers during her escape, that is very reminiscent of the Birds of Prey fight. It's very colorful, it's very animated, much like everything that goes on in her mind is in Birds of Prey. There's like explosions of color and birds flying out all around her. All that stuff that I was like, it's taking what we know about the character and it's just putting her in this story in a very natural way. The fact that, like, first off, the fact that Harley Quinn and Rick Flagg are even on Team A, which is the one that gets killed on the beach, mm-hmm. in the beginning, already tells us what we need to know about what Amanda Waller's plans are. Rick Flagg stood up to Amanda Waller in the first movie and kind of gave her the middle finger and continued on with the mission with the Suicide Squad even after her direct orders. So this time around, he's on Squad A. Squad A was the distraction. Everyone on Squad A was very much more expendable than everyone on Squad B. So even though Blackguard did sell them out, it doesn't really matter, because Squad A's entire role was to keep the Corto Maltese army, like the entire military division of Corto Maltese, busy while Squad B went in to infiltrate. The thing that they were going after was to destroy the data that the entire Project Starfish is being funded by America and has American origin. Amanda Waller is so smart, like we said before, she's such a wonderful foil for characters that she would have she knows that Rick Flagg would not be on board with destroying that information. He would 100% want to get it out there. So he's on her shit list for the 2016 Suicide Squad and for the fact that he wouldn't be okay with this mission. He's like Captain America in the Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. You need a Black Widow. You need someone who's willing to go there. And the mission parameters, he didn't have them all. So much so that he makes a line. I don't know. I didn't select the team because the Weasel falls into the water and immediately starts drowning.
That was funny.
And Harley Quinn's just like, what the hell is going on? Like he's like, I don't know. I didn't pick the team. So Amanda Waller gave him a Suicide Squad.
A literal Suicide Squad.
And gave him zero information on them, which is complete opposite of what she did in the first one where he was there handpicking them all along with her. So I think that's in direct response to A, the original Suicide Squad, and B, that he wouldn't be on board for this mission. So him and Harley Quinn are both on the literal Suicide Squad, the squad that was meant to die. So that B squad could go to the location, get the data, get the fuck out. And that's the type of stuff that like I'm picking up while watching this, but it's not being expressly told to me. It's being shown to me in just the right amount of way.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree. And it's little stuff like that makes me even more impressed with Gunn's directing, you know, choices and stuff like that.
And of course, like they did this fantastic thing throughout the movie of setting Peacemaker up against Bloodsport, right?
Yeah, because very good job of that.
Like what's Bloodsport's power? He's really good at shooting, and he's just kind of like a military guy. Cool. What's Peacemaker's thing? He's really good at shooting and just all around military guy. So he's the same thing. Like they immediately set him up to be opposed to each other because they are the same thing. So you immediately want to see those two against each other because just from the beginning, because they essentially are there for the same exact reason. Why do you need two people of the same cause? Because one of them is meant to get the mission done while the other one's meant to die. But also, if you wonder if Rick Flagg was supposed to die on Team A, why in the hell would they send the Suicide Squad out to even rescue Rick Flagg in the first place? It's easy. He has an emotional tie to Dubois, to Bloodsport. Therefore, Rick Flagg would be needed to develop Dubois' character further, even for Amanda Waller's purposes, because Rick Flagg, you know, is a leader, natural leader, and natural leaders inspire. So rescuing Rick Flagg was important for them to do because, A, Rick Flagg's an asset for getting this mission done, not to mention Waller has a plan B, which is Peacemaker, who will ultimately take out Rick Flagg should he not go along with the plan, which just goes to show you how deep Amanda Waller goes into her planning. She's got contingencies on top of contingencies on top of contingencies. So that's that type of stuff is where like after I watched this movie twice, I went like, this is, I don't want to say brilliant writing, but this is good writing at its finest.
And fully understanding what you're doing within this world. And I think that was one of the things that I previously had high hopes for, was the fact that he wanted to do this movie. This was a big undertaking, and he knows how to handle ensemble pretty well. And
he wanted to be let off his leash a little bit, right?
He purposefully wanted to do a very, very large ensemble, the Suicide Squad, and completely use random characters to play with and mold and bend and exfoliate to the point where you have stars. I mean, you have favorites that were complete nobodies or laughing stocks within that world.
But like we said when we did our brief review on 2016 Suicide Squad, you know, when James Gunn was brought in by Warner Brothers, he was asked, you know, to direct a Superman movie, and he smartly, you know, to them said like, no, that's not me. And they said, well, what do you want to do? And he goes, I want to take a crack at Suicide Squad. And he, since he was given such carte blanche, he was like, also, I want to make it rated R. I want to fix the problems that you did before while creating something so wholly and completely new and different that you will forget about the 2016 Suicide Squad. And largely, I do. I could care less about what happened in that movie as a result of James Gunn. Before then, it's a stain. It's a dirty taste in your mouth. I spit it out.
Yeah, but, it is.
But when you add the word the in front of it and James Gunn's name attached to it, I just went like, okay, All right. Now I get it. You know, now I get it. I get why this guy is given such a long leash. And I think after this, after the critical reception of this, I gotta think like Disney gives him a little bit of longer of a leash as well, right?
Yeah.
I think they already know. I think they already knew with Guardians of the Galaxy. I think as long as he stayed in the PG-13 realm, this dude could get away with anything.
It's been done filming though, but I think he already had it. Yeah, he was going to have it.
So there's a ton of other things like I could sit here and break down.
Oh,
about,
the
like,
transition stuff I thought was really creative. What'd you think of all the script stuff, like the chapters and everything like that, or like messages?
I thought it was fine.
I thought it was fitting for the movie. And it kind of reminded me of Wes Anderson, because Wes Anderson does stuff like that sometimes.
So, scale of 1 to 10, how surprised were you at the deaths that we got? And I'm not talking about all the deaths on the beach, because everyone on the beach died. Like,
Not counting the beginning.
Like, I love how TDK's arms pop off, and he's slapping people with his arms, and it's like, what a pointless power. And then they start shooting his arms, and he falls on the ground screaming, ah!
Yeah, that was funny.
Everyone dies, and we're also introduced to Michael Rooker's character of Savant, who you think is like, oh man, this guy must be important because we're starting a movie with him and stuff
exactly.
like that.
Exactly, I think that's my point. Like, I
what
really
a wonderful
respect that.
What a wonderful cold open, essentially, like to just introduce you to this world again, essentially, except we're doing it right this time. It's like, did you like this person?
And Javelin literally did nothing. Except hand the javelin off to Harley Quinn.
You're meant to have this,
Harley Quinn,
and he dies, and she's like, because what? because what? She starts like slapping him. And her whole motivation for like just liking him was so the fact that like he's cute and he has an accent, and it's like that's very Harley Quinn of you. But also, she didn't really give a flying fuck about him, because even when he's dead, she's willing to slap his body. She's not sad about it. She just wasn't know why the fuck she was given this thing. And of course, we find out why she was given that thing. It's to jump really far, probably further than any human is capable of jumping, but she did it. And then she stabs Starro in the eye, and I fucking love that. I love the way, you know, Ratcatcher the entire time throughout the entire movie, what a pointless fucking power. It seems completely pointless, especially when there's a gun pointed at her face by Peacemaker.
Yeah.
And I heard a few people in their reviews just like, why didn't she call the rats in then to take out Peacemaker? And if you think back to the scene when she was almost eaten by King Shark, did she choose violence against King Shark? No. She literally used diplomacy with him.
Yeah.
She became his friend so that he wouldn't eat her anymore.
I mean, ultimately, she's not like...
She's not a violent character.
She is the odd one out in this group.
Which I think is why it makes sense for Idris Elba's character, who's this ultimate bad guy. And I love his, you know, his throwaway, like, why is he locked up? Because he put Superman in the ICU with a kryptonite bullet. And it's like, that's all I need to know. That's all I need to know.
Yeah.
But we know that he's this ultimate bad guy, and we know he's a piece of shit because he has a meeting with his daughter where he treats her like shit. He does nothing to dissuade her from a life of crime. In fact, he tells her that she's stupid for getting caught. Next time, get a get someone to watch your back. Get a lookout. You know, and that's it. Like, that's his advice to his daughter. It's terrible advice, and she calls him out on it. So he obviously, you know, because this rat catcher is kind of the innocent in the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
He takes her, like, it's, he feels like it's his duty to kind of like get her out. At least I got to get her out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, earning its name with Suicide Squad. I started this diatribe right here asking you, Jay, what were the deaths that surprised you the most? So what were they?
I thought it was fitting, and I thought it was funny and good closure for Polka Dot Man's death. And ultimately,
it was nice.
I gotta say,
you
was
felt
not
bad for Polka Dot Man, right? Like, I think we all have.
You had a lot of empathy for him because you understood.
You did, you know. And one of the little touches
that
I liked was, we know that he sees his mother on everyone's face, which is why it's so easy for him to kill people. But one of the funny ass things that I loved was while they were all in the strip club, just kind of like bonding over drinks, much like the Guardians did, much like the previous Suicide Squad.
Oh my God.
While he's dancing,
it was funny and creepy at the
shit.
Same time.
He's going apeshit in there. The first time I watched it, I didn't notice it because I was too busy watching the main character who's in the center of the screen. He's the focal point. Second time I watched it, I went, oh my God, all the women he's grinding up against are his mother. which is great because, you know, we which is why we get a little blip of what his mother looks like before. Also, the stripper that does the go-go dance and does the song and dance in the beginning is the same actress who plays Mantis in Guardians of the Galaxy. So another cameo for you there. Also, Sean Gunn cameos in the beginning when he makes fun of Polka Dot Man is playing Calendar Man, who is a Batman villain who was in the movie that in our previous episode when I talked about what I was watching. When I talked about the Long Halloween, Calendar Man shows up in that. Very different type of portrayal for him, but still very funny. Still very funny. And, was a surprise because they spent so much time developing
him. Well, and really quick, I do have a fun fact, too. The IT guy, the bearded white guy, you know, stocky kind of looking guy, with Waller.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually did the motion capture work for King Shark.
Oh, did he? All right, that's fun. Yeah. Obviously, getting Sylvester Stallone, and like the way Sylvester Stallone was hired is fucking hilarious. So Sylvester Stallone was called up by James Gunn. Obviously, he worked with him in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and he asked him if he would like to do a role in the Suicide Squad. And, you know, in true Stallone fashion, what do you have in mind? And James Gunn's just like, I want you to be a shark, a giant shark man thing. But you're not going to play him. I just want you to do the voice. It's going to be very easy for you to do. I'll do anything for you, brother. Which is like his literal response. Anything for you, brother. and that's how Sylvester Stallone was hired. A phone call by James Gunn himself. That's how much power this guy has garnered. Everyone who works with him loves him.
You can't go wrong with a little voice role. I mean,
to think he was 1 year out from cancel culture and was almost canceled permanently.
I know.
It's amazing.
I know.
It's amazing. For a joke did you really think the guy that used to work for Troma and make Troma films, who's also friends with the dudes who make South Park, isn't going to make a controversial joke every fucking now and then? Like, Jesus Christ. I talked about it a little bit, but he was targeted by the right-wing agenda purposefully to take down members of Hollywood and stuff like that. It was a whole thing going on at the time. Fox News, you know.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole. I know.
It's a terrible rabbit hole to go down. But anyway, like it's amazing that like this movie almost didn't happen because of cancel culture or, you know, somewhere around 2 years ago.
Yeah. And I think ultimately the biggest shock of all was obviously Colonel Rick Flagg.
Rick Flagg going down, man.
And confirming it by showing the piece go into the heart.
It's almost
there's like no question about it. He's done.
I swear James Gunn was watching dailies, right? And he's just like, wait a minute, superhero movie logic. If someone's stabbed anywhere in the chest, if anyone's stabbed anywhere that isn't the head, right? If a bullet doesn't go through a head or an axe doesn't go through a head or no damage is done to a head, then you assume that a character to come back. I want to make sure that everybody knows the stakes involved here, that Rick Flagg is not coming back. How do we do that? Well, yeah. Mortal Kombat does this really cool thing where they do an x-ray of the people and they show you the damage that's being done. Maybe we can just pull in on an x-ray of a piece of porcelain stabbing right into the heart of Rick Flagg. Awesome. Let's do that.
even Weasel survived.
but I love his final line. Peacemaker. What a joke. He just falls down. And it's like this very like almost like Watchmen type moment, right? Mm. Like where the comedian's like not a comedian at all, right? He's very dark and stuff like that. It's a very like dark joke at a moment where he's dying. And it's like, I get it, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved Peacemaker throughout the movie. You know, if I had to lick every dick on this island for liberty, I would do it.
Yeah, but I love the one-liners. I think what's so great was like he didn't crack throughout the whole movie whatsoever. No. And you understand, like I bought it. That scene when he's fighting him is like, look, brother, you know, you're a hero. I don't want to be doing this. Like, you know, don't make me do this to you. And
yeah, no,
he didn't want to kill him, but he was going to kill him because that's his beliefs. He
believes at any cost.
And
he would
kill women and children.
I would kill every man,
exactly.
Woman, and child for peace.
Exactly, you know? And that's for his peace to exist. That's his Bible. So,
right. He is exactly as he was sold in the comic books and as James Gunn sold him. He is the anti-Captain America. Mm-hmm. He is the exact opposite, the nega version. And you know, one of the things I do want to touch on a little, just a very minor bit, is a lot of people are touting this movie, holding it up in the air and saying like it's so subversive to superhero media that we've gotten in the past, that it's kind of amazing and it stands on a pedestal for that reason. And I think that that's disingenuous to say. I think that this is an amalgam of that type of culture that has been around since the early 90s when Image Comics started. So then the reason I want to do this is because I want to give credit when credit's due. This is not the first subversive comic book movie that's gone hyper-violent to also punch up its jokes and also make its point about poking fun at the superhero genre.
Yeah, but they
genre,
also
right?
did a good job with the death scenes showing that it is in a comical way. It's not
exactly
gory.
Exactly.
I mean, it's gory, but it's not like
but that's
realistic
been going on,
kind of gory.
That's been going on since the hyper-violence of Spawn when Image Comics started, you know, Savage Dragon, The Tick, and even modernly, like, it's going on right now in Invincible, in both the comic book and the television series and the soon-to-come movie, and also in a show that me and Jay have reviewed and both absolutely love, The Boys. So this type of subversive, and those are just examples. There's many other examples out there. But, like, it, you know, James Gunn is not, he's the most recent to do it and probably the most prominent to do it right now, but he's not the only one out there doing it. So there is,
he just has the most experience doing it. That's
what I'm saying. He and the most exposure.
Sure.
But that goes into what me and Jay were talking about last week when we did a news story where he's doing a lot of these interviews where he's talking about he's tired of the superhero genre, he's tired of the superhero culture and all that stuff, and he kind of wants to, it's all because this movie is so very much a polar opposite to those things
of the run of the mill
exactly, which we, me and you both called out as marketing, and 100% is marketing. It's not bad marketing, it's good marketing. That's great. Hell yeah, that is how your director should be selling this movie. I wish I had more time to get into like Easter eggs, because I literally have a list and I looked at the time and I was like,
no, thank you,
we can't do a 90-minute review for this movie. There's so much to get to. I think the people who watched it know how great it is, and if they have any more questions or want to discuss it,
and don't torture me more about Easter eggs,
they know where to reach us.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I did forget this. So Weasel did live, so presumably he's off to kill 27 more children. Mm. Which is a line I love when Rick Flagg is just like, he's harmless, well, mostly he killed 27 children or something like that. And then Pete Davidson's like, what is this, like a dog? Is this supposed to be like, oh my god, is this a fucking werewolf? Freaking out.
I still just love it with him licking the glass. Like, I just love that scene. Like, it's just the motion.
And of course Sean Gunn, just like he did for Rocket, did all the motion capture for that character. And then I forgot to follow up with the fact that Peacemaker, even though they set up the entire thing where he uses exploding compression rounds and no one cares about your shit, and he's like, unless the shit you're showing off is fucking dope. Bloodsport, damn it, he's right.
That was good.
Bloodsport uses a smaller bullet to shoot through his bullet to kill him, which I would normally say that's awfully serendipitous that it happened that way, except the fact that that scene happened before that and he knew that it was a compression round, which meant that a smaller bullet would go through it. And I was like, that's a great way to write yourself out of a piece of shit moment and mm-hmm. turn it into a piece of gold. Fucking King Midas touch you got there, James Gunn. But Peacemaker, even though he met his demise in the main movie in the post credit scene, he is alive, and we will be getting an HBO Max series, which I believe has already started or wrapped up production. Peacemaker, 6 episodes for the first season. And the it was essentially the people that turned on Amanda Waller and beat her over the head with a fucking golf club. As their punishment, they now have to deal with John Cena's Peacemaker and send him on his own missions. I assume he'll be working for Checkmate, which is an offshoot of Task Force X of the Suicide Squad, which is actually the books that the Peacemaker originally premiered in. So, I mean, there's a fucking metric fuck ton of things about this movie that I would love to break down and discuss in more detail. I was doing it with Duty just before we recorded. So, like, we have the hotline ask us a question about our thoughts on something from this movie by reaching out to us on that hotline. And the hotline number is 267-590-9042. Just leave us a voicemail. Ask us a question. Me and Jay will answer it on the very next episode. You can also send us an email to supermoviebrospodcast@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to us on our social medias. I am on Twitter, at Super Movie Pod, and true to my word, I've been more active over there. And then I am also on Instagram, SMB Dave, over there. Jay, where can people find you?
Well, you can reach me on Twitter as well, J_SMB, Facebook, Super Movie Bros Podcast, and Instagram, Super Movie Bros.
And Jay has his own porn Tumblr now. For more on that story, you'll have to check out our Patreon. So yes, to get access to our Patreon episodes, head over to patreon.com/supermoviebrospodcast. There you can catch all of our pre-roll conversations that we have. and this one's an interesting one. Man, tell you, I don't often like tell you how great our Patreon episodes are. This one is truly a peek behind the curtain, and pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, please. In this case, if you see his pictures online, don't look at them. You're only funding a madman. And as I maniacally laugh, thus making myself the madman. Not true. Mm. But our Patreon, this specific Patreon episode is just so fucking gold.
It's a big one.
It is. And of course, we are part of a network. We are part of the Age of Radio podcasting network. So head over to ageofradio.org. There you can go to the shows, click on our show. You'll find a media player that has all the available Super Movie Bros there for you to listen to. You can binge Super Movie Bros, or you can check out all the rest of the shows that are part of the Age of Radio podcasting network. So I want to thank all of you for listening. Have a great one. Cheers.